Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Talitha Williams, your faith-based community nurse, and we're in the trenches again talking about health and wellness. And it is my sincere prayer that things have gone well, that you have remained safe, and that you are blessed, and that God continues to keep you daily. And my scripture tonight is coming out of 1 Corinthians 3:16-17. Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy. For the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. And tonight, I want to talk specifically on women health. And not that I've known about, not known about the disparities of health care when it comes to women. It's well known among the medical community, and it's well known that a lot of the research done is more geared towards men than women. But what brought it back to the forefront of my mind is one of my godsons, who is doing his master's, had to do a podcast, and his podcast was on the inequity, the health inequity when it comes to women. And so when he came over, I thought, you know, he just wanted me to like give him some input. And actually what ended up happening is that he wanted me to do the podcast with him, and also to share some of the experiences that, you know, that I had witnessed during my career as a nurse when it comes to women health. And there's always been that inequity, not just in the private sector, but even among the veteran administration. And during my tenure there, I saw that there was a slow shift in promoting women's care to raise it to the equal amount of care that we provide to the male, because a lot of those women, believe it or not, went through a whole lot, and not just the sexual trauma, but a lot of other issues that they had. And one specific female veteran that I remember, she had a lot of problems with seizures, and could never get her service connection through the VA. And there was a social worker that was working very diligently to help her with this. In the meantime, while she was waiting on this, she was living on whatever income she had, and she worked part-time at Jack's, which is a local fast food restaurant here, but it's very well known throughout the South. And she would have seizures, but she would still continue to work as much as she could. Inevitably, she had a seizure at work, and of course the patrons were taken aback by it. So they told her they had to let her go. Now, what we did was able to find out about her as much as we were able to gather, because apparently what she did was secret. We don't know why she was held in a cave, but we were able to get out of her that she was held in a cave. We don't know what else happened, because what she would give us was so limited, she blocked it. And no matter how much mental health tried to bring it to the forefront, we never could get it. But we got enough information, which we thought that it would help her to at least get some type of service connection disability through the VA. Don't know that she ever got it, you know, because the process is slow for men, so it's even slower for women. But that just goes to show you how that a lot of times that even though women play a very important part in our society, that there's a lot of inequity in their health care. When I left, they were just putting in, because you have the young women with children or have babies, they were just put in bathrooms that had changing tables, they had nursing stations. Even with the women that worked at the VA that were still nursing, but they still didn't have anywhere for them to go. They had to use an extra room that wasn't being used. So, you know, we do see that it's slowly coming, but there is definitely an inequity in health care. And when you talk about health equity, what you're talking about is the state in which everybody has a fair and a just opportunity to attain their highest level of health. And to achieve this, it requires ongoing societal efforts to address the historical and contemporary injustices. It also, they have to overcome economic, social, and other obstacles to health and health care, and they have to eliminate the preventative disparities. And so in order to achieve health equity, we must change the system. We must change systems, and we have to change policies that have resulted in generational injustices that gives rise to racial and ethnic health disparities. So the health disparities for women. Women are more prone than men to some risk factors that cause heart disease, stroke, cancer, diabetes, and dementia. Women who are caregivers are at a greater risk for poor physical and mental health, including depression and anxiety. I want to stop there, and I want to share with you a story that I just read. It was on the popped up on my internet. And the title is, "It's a Long Goodbye to My Mom While Trying to Be a Mom Myself." And what this story was about is this lady's mother was in hospice fighting the end stage of her battle with colon cancer. And 5 days into her mother's being in an at-home hospice, this lady called her husband and they lived in Los Angeles, and asked him to, she said, "It's time that you fly out to Houston from Los Angeles with their son, who was only 13 months old. And when he told her he had bought the ticket for the following day, she experienced fear. She was convinced that she would fail. Her thought was, how can I handle anything else other than the death of the grief that she was experiencing? How could she manage work and childcare and relationships when she had so much heaviness pulling on her at this point? She felt like that she was so overwhelmed that even though she wanted her son there, she felt like that she would not be able to really be that mom that she wanted to be. You know, she felt like, you know, in her toughest moment, she could not imagine giving one more ounce of herself away. She had very little confidence that she could take on anything else other than administering medication and keeping herself awake. And this really brought fear and put a lot of mental stress on her. She did indicate that, you know, when her young son did arrive, to her relief, that she did was able to overcome all this anxiety and this fear, and she felt a rush of love, and she realized that there was more to give, and that her, instead of not being able to care for her son, that actually he restored her energy instead of, you know, like she said, in her words, sucking me dry. Her mom was slowly leaving, but she had that time with her child to feed and change and medicate. And so, in essence, the next few days, the hours just took a toll on her, where she went through the motions of living and existing, going through the ups and downs of the mental exhaustion. She even talks about that the nurse told her that she didn't think her mother had more than 24 hours. And she talks about she felt she was lucky to have had a mom. And she indicated, you know, well, we defrosted lasagnas and casserole, which she barely ate. And, you know, she said by the last 2 days, she finally had the courage to say to her mom, it's okay, you can go. And her mom died. And then, of course, she had to go through the other part of the funeral and the grieving process. So you can see women as caregivers, it's hard on them. And that really struck a chord, because here is a mother with a 13-month-old baby who is under a lot of stress and, you know, not feeling that she would be adequate to really give her child the care that she really desires. In the end, though, in reading the article, it did work out. She did go through the grieving process. She did really reconnect with her husband and family, and, okay, they began the bonding. And she says she just learned to live life without a mom, but she had those memories. The other thing we see is that women with disability really need the same general health care as women without disability. In fact, they may also require additional care to address their individual and specific needs. The other thing that we see with women is, and this is one of the things that the VA started just before I retired, is intimate partner violence. And this can range anywhere from one episode of violence that can have a lasting impact to more constant and severe episodes over multiple years. And IPV, which is intimate partner violence, can include behaviors such as physical or sexual violence, stalking, and psychological aggression. There are a lot of negative health outcomes associated with IPV, and this can include a range of conditions affecting the heart, the digestive, the reproductive, the muscles, and the bones, and the nervous system, as well as their mental problems, such as depression and symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Despite scientific and medical advancements, women continue to be disproportionately affected by many diseases, which include chronic pain, depression, autoimmune disease, osteoporosis, and dementia. In addition, you know, they can have common female-specific, you know, conditions such as endometriosis, which really at this time in life remains largely understudied and like any kind of effective diagnosis or treatment option. These, as well as, you know, the rising rate of course, everybody knows about the maternal morbidity and mortality in the United States, underscores the necessity for women's health research and the importance of women's health as a public priority. And I can remember years ago in the early years of my nursing career, they were talking about the understudies of women, the lack of appropriate research to address women's issues. And that was, and I've been nursing almost 34 years, and I can remember in the first few years of coming out of nursing school, this was a big issue, and it still is. You know, health conditions that such as obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and pregnancy have plagued ethnic minority groups at a disproportionate rate in the United States compared to their white counterparts. Women and girls often encounter barriers with accessing adequate health care, which puts them at risk for, you know, good well-being. Now, I looked at some statistics, and the National Vital Statistics System mortality data reported in 2020 from CDC said the three leading causes of death in women are heart disease, cancer, and COVID. These diseases account for the lives of over 730,000 women in 2020. And 9% of the women were under the age of 65 years did not have health insurance. And that's just astounding that even though it's a low percentage, that 9.5% of these women under age 65 still did not have any kind of health insurance. Cardiovascular disease has been a leading cause of death in women, and it continues to rise. among the general population. And that's why I'm trying to think. There is a month that's dedicated to, and you may have heard, it says Go Red. Go Red means that this particular month they're focusing on the cardiovascular health of women, because this is the leading cause of death. And when we look at the 2016 data, black women are 53% more likely to have hypertension than non-white counterparts. That's a no-brainer, because we know that hypertension is very prevalent in the African-American population. But black women older than age 20 years are also most likely, and I'm looking at this age, and it's just astronomical, and I'm going to put in a bullet point here. Always known, we've always seen that once, even men, but once women hit 65, that their health kind of shifts to having more prominent problems, because past health issues and the age itself changes the dynamics of health, period, and especially in women. But when you get older, things just start to function less efficiently than it normally does. So that's a no-brainer, that when women get older, you're going to see some issues, maybe not as, you know, death, you know, not as fatal or more, causing more significant problems, but you do see that shift. But look at the age now. Now, 65, yeah, but black women older than age 20 years are also more likely to have hypertension, diabetes, and obesity, which all of these are risk factors for cardiovascular disease. This really, to me, is mind-boggling. From 65 now down to 20 and older, we see significant changes in women's health. Obesity is more common in non-Hispanic blacks and Hispanic women. 56.1% in non-Hispanic blacks and 48.4% in Hispanic women. When you compare this to non-Hispanic white women, Puerto Ricans and Central American women are at 40.9% and 32.7%. So Puerto Ricans are at 40.9%, Central America 32.7%. This is respectively, they are the greatest contributor to the Hispanic women obesity rate. In spite of all of the reforms that we see happening within our country, women are still forced to choose between their health and their finances. Bullet point. A lot of women, if you look at, go to your restaurants, who do you see there serving you on a large proportion? Your fast food, who do you see serving you in a large number? Okay? Women usually take lower paying jobs to help make ends meet, to support families a lot of time, because they are the sole breadwinner. And I've seen that a lot. You know, the pay is just not that great. Then you have to look at, and I was just hearing about this recently, the rise in child care is paying a significant part. So you get, they're out working, but then the child care is getting more expensive. Nine times out of ten, even in a two-parent home, when the child gets sick, the mother is the one that has to take off and care for the child. So there are a lot of you know, factors involved with the fact that women's health is at risk. There's also racism. Racism also is contributes to the worsening class, social, and economic gaps in care, and that in itself increases the disparity for women. African American women are more likely to have difficulty accessing care, and are less likely to receive optimum health outcomes. A lot of times, especially in the African American population, they don't ask questions. Sometimes they don't know what to ask. They don't ask for alternatives. Doctors on a whole don't really spend a lot of time with women, period. And so they pretty much just, whatever the doctor tells them, they just accept it. I know a lady who went to the doctor. Now, she is not, she did graduate from high school, let me put it this way, but her ability to comprehend is not as significant, and she understands, but when you're getting into a healthcare environment, her ability to understand what the doctor was telling her was limited. So he told her, this is what's going on. This lady had, I don't know if she had a hysterectomy or a tooth tie, but she didn't know what she was signing. She had another operation. She can't even tell you what that operation was. Okay? She's had several, and she doesn't know why she's getting them. She doesn't know about alternatives. At one point, I did go with her, but now she goes on her own. But she was having a lot of problems, and I asked, I said, well, what did they do? She said, I don't know. And so I try to teach women, any of them, most of the time, your white counterparts are going to ask questions. But I try to teach them to ask questions, ask for alternatives. Now, because I'm a nurse, when I see my doctor, he tells me something, I said, wait, what's the alternative? What can I try first? I went to my dermatologist and I had an area, and I wanted her to check it. And so when I went in, she said, she told me what it was, and then she gave me options. She said, and I already know because it's on your chart. You're not just going to take anything I say, and I know I have to give you options. She knew right then, and she said, I know you have to, make that decision. And so I'm giving you your option, and you tell me what you want to do. This is what I teach women to do. You go in, and if you don't understand what he's saying, you tell him you don't understand it, okay? And so you tell him or her, I don't understand what you're saying. Can you put it in everyday terms so I can understand it? If there are words that he uses, make the person write it down. And that is the only way that you're going to be able to manage your health care so that you're being cared for at an optimal level. And studying what they were saying with the CDC, health disparities among women still continue to exist, despite the mitigating circumstances such as public awareness projects and public health initiatives. Increasing awareness of injustice and improving access to health care and developing policies are positive interventions that will continue to promote health equity for women. So you've got the education out there, okay? You've got the awareness out there. You've got information out there. But the information, and sometimes I look at it, it's like, if I wasn't a nurse, sometimes I wouldn't understand what they're talking about. And so I think what we have to do a better job is talking at a level that women understand, especially our younger women. I have talked to a lot of the young women in my church, answer questions, but you would be surprised, in spite of the access to internet and all this information on social media, they still lack knowledge regarding their health care, either because at that age, the young age, they have not made it a priority, or because they don't take the time to look at that because their focus is more on the more social part of the social media. And so we just as healthcare providers have to do a better job in doing and helping people to understand, especially women, how important this is. And then as a medical society, we have to make better plans in putting out research and also better education at a level where it can draw the attention of our women, young and old. I can remember they did some kind of outdoors fair, and I was asked to participate. And so when I bought stuff, I had colors and pictures and all kinds of stuff, and it drew people's attention. Because I didn't just have writing up there. I had colorful things, pictures, and stuff like that. And it just drew their attention, and they asked questions. And so we have to use whatever method that is available to help with educating our women regarding their health care and try to bring down this disparity that we're seeing. When I did the leading cause of death for female, and this is all races, all origins, and this data is, the latest data I got was 2018, heart disease ranked number one, 21.8%. Cancer right behind it at 20.5%. Stroke, 6.2%. Chronic lower respiratory disease, 6.1%. Alzheimer's, 6.1%. Unintentional injuries, 4.3%. Diabetes, 2.7%. I was surprised at that. Influenza, pneumonia, 2.2%. Kidney disease, 1.8%. And septicemia, 1.5%. And this was the status of the leading cause of death in women. I'm going to do a little bit of the heart. I'm going to start with the heart because that is the leading cause. I will not finish it tonight. I'll pick it up next week. But cardiovascular disease is number one killer of women. Since 2004, the American Heart Association's signature women's initiative, Go Red, has addressed the awareness and the clinical care gaps of women's greatest health threat, which is your cardiovascular disease. There's evolving needs of women now and at every age, at every stage, and every season of their life. So what they're trying to do is find trusted, relevant sources for credible, equitable health solutions. This kind of floored me a little bit. Nearly 45% of women ages 20 plus are living with some form of cardiovascular disease. And when I do these statistics, it just floors me. Age of 20 years plus are living with some form of cardiovascular disease. And less than half of the women entering pregnancy in the United States have optimal cardiovascular health. Less than half of the women. And I've read articles where women, after having babies, have cardiovascular events. The other thing is women experience unique life stages such as pregnancy and menopause, and that can put them at increased risk for cardiovascular disease. We may have time. Let's cover some of the facts that I found out that women need to know, and as a rule, people need to know about women and cardiovascular disease. Number one, it kills more women than all forms of cancer combined, but yet only 44% of women recognize that cardiovascular disease is their greatest health threat. Let me see if I can find this. I had an article I read. Let's see if I can find it. About a lady. I guess I can't find it, but, oh, here it is. This is an article that I read, and it said that, it's an article about a woman. She wrote about that she had recently had flu-like symptoms, and she was treating those symptoms appropriately, but during the course of time, she became weak and unable to move and lightheaded. And she was able to muster up enough strength to call out to her husband, and he took her to the ER. And she was having a massive, she just had flu-like symptoms, but when it kept getting worse and the weakness and she couldn't do anything, when she went to the hospital, she was having a massive heart attack. Sometimes women have a more subtle heart attack symptoms that may be unrelated to chest pain. So, but this is, I thought that was interesting that here she is thinking she has the flu, and actually she is having a heart attack. I am going to stop right there because the rest of this will take a little bit. I want to pick this up when I come on next Tuesday. We're still going to be talking about women's health. And then, of course, we are going to also talk about, finish up about the cardiovascular problems in women. But the main thing that I want us to understand is that there is definitely a need to put more efforts into providing equitable health care for women. I'm going to conclude that tonight. You know, there are no comments or any questions. I want to pick that up because I want to take the time to go through these individual things so that you can know, or if you know someone, can talk to them about that and how important it is for them to really be aware of their health. So if no questions or comment, I'm going to sign off for tonight. We'll pick this up on next Tuesday. So I want you to have a good evening. And we will talk again soon.